to introduce Dr. Wynn Kern. Wynn is a surgeon and owner of Orthopedic Fracture Clinic down in Mankato, and has been really involved in many different community and for-profit work. So with that, Dr. Kern.
Good morning.
Well, as you now know, I'm Wynn Carney. I'm from Mankato. With the exception of a few years for schooling and my service in the United States Navy, I've lived in Minnesota all my life. I started thinking about this opportunity on the board. And I started thinking, of course, about education. And I came to realize, as I sort of looked at my life, that I've been involved with education as a sort of a sidebar all my life. When I was in Franklin Elementary School in Mankato, this was early post-World War II years, and class sizes were huge, 32 to 38 kids in a class all the way through grade school in my time. And so that gave an opportunity for me to tutor my fellow classmates and all the way through grade school. Once the next year teacher found out I'd done it the previous year, they were more than happy to have help. So I tutored in math and spelling. I've now long since lost my abilities in spelling, but thank goodness for spell check, because I don't even think about spelling anymore. But I did that all the way through grade school, and it was fun. It was great to see the progress that my fellow classmates had made, and it was a good time. Later in medical school, I was a teaching assistant in the Department of Anatomy of the medical school for 1 year, and then for 2 years, I was a teaching assistant in the Department of Biochemistry of the dental school. So that teaching experience is something I really enjoyed. Later, when I was a resident at the Mayo Clinic, when I became a chief resident in particular, I had a chance to mentor and teach and be involved with some of the younger residents and the interns and medical students as well. When I came out of the Navy and went back to Mankato, I immediately became involved with MSU Mankato as adjunct faculty, and I was involved in teaching with lecture and hands-on experiences for the athletic training students and pre-physical therapy students. So I did that for about 25 years, and it was great. About 15 years ago, University of Minnesota developed a family practice residency program based in Mankato. As a consequence of that and wanting to be involved with the teaching of the residents, I am now an associate professor of the University of Minnesota Medical School, teaching orthopedics in that particular residency program. I've also been involved in education by funding scholarships, and when I have been thinking about it lately, it really adds up if you do that consistently over about 30 years. adds up to a lot of money, but it adds up to a lot of kids that have had a chance to have a more affordable college education and to get on with their lives. With that, I'd be open to questions.
Thank you very much for your introduction. We do have 7 questions, and we'll be going around the room asking those questions, and then we'll have an opportunity for you to ask questions about the role of a trustee, should you have any, and then open questions and a closing statement. So I've lost track, so why don't we start with Carolyn?
Okay, my first question is, would you please describe your understanding of the role of a trustee and explain why you consider yourself a good candidate for this role?
The trustees really should be involved in formulating policy, contributing to development of a strategic plan, and really taking a big picture kind of a look. I don't think the trustees should be managing. I don't think they should be micromanaging. They need to be involved appropriately as a board with the chancellor and with the staff and facilitate the implementation of and the development of a strategic plan and policies. When the plan has been developed, then we want to make sure policies that are in alignment with the plan so that it can have the chance to be most successful. As far as my qualifications, the board of trustees is really a lay board for the most part. It's not people involved as professional educators. We need to have a board that has diversity, geographic and occupational, I guess, would be the diversity that I'd offer. I don't think there's very many physicians who have the time, for starters, to commit to a board such as this. But also, I have experience in serving on quite a number of business boards, nonprofit boards, professional boards, and this has given me a perspective on what I think is good governance, which is how a board or how an organization carries out its day-to-day business. I think I have a good appreciation for the ways a decision should be made and the best way to make decisions, and maybe that'll come up later as far as another question.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Kearney, could you go a little bit more in depth on specific past board experiences and how they are relevant specifically to the Minsky board?
You know, I don't think anybody ever is asked to be on one board because they're on another board. I don't think anyone has ever elected president of an organization because they were president of another organization. But I think when you take a look at someone's resume, you get some sense of their ability to communicate, their leadership style, and the way other people may have felt about them. I've been president of a number of organizations, and of course that always involves board activities. I've been president, and I don't mean to be immodest about it, but I'll just give you a list. I've been president of our local hospital staff. I've been president of our county medical society. I've been president of the Southern Minnesota Medical Association. I've been president and on the board for many years of the Minnesota Orthopedic Society. I've also been president of a national organization, the Orthopedic Practice Society. I've served on corporate boards. I've served on two NASDAQ-listed publicly traded companies, one of them for 23 years and just rotated off that board, and another one for about 18 years. I was elected chairman of the board of one of the two companies, Hickory Tech, which is a telecommunications company. I have been on nonprofit boards, been chairman of a number, and also been involved with foundations, including MSU Foundation in Mankato.
Yeah, the next question is, what do you see as the key issues on the horizon for higher education and in Minnesota, and especially for the Minsky system in particular?
Horizon sort of implies it's out there. I think the issues are already here. The first issue is making sure that the Minsky educational system and the coursework that it offers, whether it's at the two-year level or at the four-year level, is accessible and affordable for the students. 10 years ago, the state covered 70% of the cost, overall cost of Minsky, and the students provided roughly 30% of the cost. Now it's reversed. The students provide 70% of the cost. The state is providing 35% of the cost, and this is really a very difficult framework for a student to plan an education and be able to contribute to his education with part-time jobs. The expenses for students have gone up, but they still get $7 an hour when they work in part-time jobs, and it's really hard to make ends meet when that happens. This creates problems with accessibility because there are students that just can't go, and it also creates problems with affordability. So I see that as a big issue. Another issue is where we sit internationally. I think relative to other American schools, our STEM programs are good. But worldwide, you know, you always see that we rank someplace behind Cameroon or something as far as our students' ability in mathematics and science in particular. So I think MinSCU needs to ramp up the program as far as mathematics, science, engineering, technology, and create a platform for our students to really be competitive internationally. And if they're better educated, they're going to be better workers, and they're going to be more productive and more innovative. Another big problem is bonding. Bonding is a word, I think, really for buildings. Mm-hmm. And when we have limited resources, for whatever reason, this creates a lot of competition within the MinSCU system. Sometimes just for things that are upkeep and maintenance. I know there's some buildings where there's been deferred maintenance for so many years that they're really practically falling down by the time bonding is provided. So some other funding mechanism needs to be addressed and created, I think. Maybe some sort of brainstorming session. I'm not sure what it would be. I do know that some of the schools in MinSCU have looked to outside sources for a partial or complete funding of buildings of a certain relatively modest size, but I think some other type of innovative ways to have the framework and our structures and our buildings intact is very important. I think those are some pretty good challenges, and there are more, but those are the ones that come to my mind.
Could you describe your understanding of diversity and your experience working with diverse populations?
Well, diversity, the first thing that pops into my mind is ethnic groups or lower or different socioeconomic backgrounds, especially as far as students are concerned. In the MinSCU system, one thing that I would be a proponent of would be recruiting a diverse student body, especially ethnic-wise, ethnic background and people of color, and also in terms of geography and some of the other areas that sort of the full state as far as a participant in it. But once these students are in school, then I think special efforts need to be made to help them succeed. And this may be mentoring, it may be tutoring, whatever it takes. But somehow or other, they need a role model and they need a road map. And so it doesn't do any good to have the diverse student population in freshman year, and by senior year, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wasted effort on the part of the kid, wasted effort and expense on the part of the system, and we're not fulfilling our role of really creating an educated workforce and a diverse educated workforce. As far as my experience with that, I was a big proponent of recruiting women on the board of directors of Hickory Tech. And we now have two very capable women on the board, and one of them has served as chair. And that's rewarding and fulfilling to me because it was my idea. And it took a little selling. Also, I was for many years the head team doctor for the Minnesota State University football team. And I traveled with the team. Was really involved with a lot of the kids. I, during recruiting visits, I would meet with their mom and dad, or I'd give a little talk about what our role as a team physician was and how it works and how what we would do to take care of their son or daughter or whatever if they had an injury. Well, on the football team, Minnesota State Mankato has about 9 or 10% people of color. but the football team has about 35% people of color, many of whom were there because they had a partial or full ride. And some of those people were just tremendous. And they got their college degree. They had a good graduation rate. And they really were role models. And many times one would go back to, I think, of Racine, Wisconsin. All of a sudden it became a hotbed of MSU football players because these successful guys would come back and be involved in the community in a way that reflected very well on their education and on the kind of person they've become. And that stimulated me to be more involved in providing athletic scholarships for MSU so that more kids can could benefit from the experience not only of playing football, but also of getting an education.
Okay, my question kind of that I've got here relates to the previous two, but we've got to maximize access for educational opportunities to students. So scholarships, but education is changing. What are your ideas or your vision for how we can maximize education for students? Does distant learning play into that?
Yes, I think distant learning plays in. I think probably the new model will be hybrid teaching with online experiences balanced off with in-class personal contact experiences. But even before that, I would say a major initiative could be making an effort to help the high schools get students ready for college. And many of the disadvantaged students come from schools that are also disadvantaged.
Yeah.
And it's very expensive when they arrive on campus. And right now, 60% of students that arrive on Minsky campuses are not high school level capable in mathematics. And 40% are also not able to write effectively and communicate effectively with a written word. So we've got 60% and 40% who already come with deficiencies. So now we have a developmental education problem where they come on campus and the first thing they have to do is pay for some courses that they don't get credit for to bring them up to speed. In mathematics, this is high school level geometry, high school level algebra, and that's tough. Mm-hmm. So I think it would relieve some of the burden from the Minsky schools and also enhance the education that the high school kids get if we can somehow partner and have, create an alliance with high schools where we help the high schools become more able to prepare students to do college work. I think everyone would benefit. The high schools would benefit. The Minsky schools would benefit. And then the young people can get started right away on an education and get out in the workforce. That's especially important, I think, for the two-year schools, but equally so for the four-year schools.
Well, thank you. Very helpful.
Well, you just mentioned two-year schools. Describe the unique challenges of a system comprised of technical, community colleges, and state universities.
Well, that train already left the station. How many years ago was it? 15 years ago. And I think the parochial infighting hopefully has long since been left behind, but I don't know. I think there's a place for University of Minnesota, the Minsky schools, and the two-year schools, and I think they really all need to talk to each other. And I think this is starting now with, I think it's the Itasca project, if I heard properly, and getting the chancellor and the commissioner of education and the University of Minnesota all involved with getting their heads together. And I think when you start talking, you're going to start finding solutions. As far as the Minsky schools go, I think there's a migration or a movement from technical schools emphasis to community college emphasis with an associate degree that's transferable. And I think transferability is part of all of this. If you'd like to have the high school students be readily able to do college work, you'd like to have the two-year students who want to go on have the background and the preparation they need to go on to the four-year schools, and also someone who's gone through the four-year schools be ready or be well-prepared for advanced degrees for those that want them. But it is hard. I think there are challenges, but I think when people recognize the challenges and start talking, I think solutions will present themselves that can solve some of these problems.
Thank you.
This is your final question of the group, but then we'll pitch in our own personal questions. What could be a perceived conflict of interest for you in a trustee role, and how would you handle the situation?
I would be hard-pressed to really feel like there was I had a conflict, but I suppose one potential one would be, let's just say, Hickory Tech, which I'm on the board and have been chair of the board. We're bidding on a project that had to do with communications mm-hmm. services for the system. First of all, I think that it's not enough to participate in the meeting and then recuse oneself from the vote. That's the way a lot of organizations are what they are satisfied with. But I think that one should not participate in the conversation or the discussion either. And in a sense, and depending on sort of the way the discussion runs, maybe not even be in the room. If you're bidding and there's competition, you shouldn't be there when the strategy of the system is developed. So I think that's probably a far-fetched conflict that I don't think would be likely to happen, but that's one that comes to mind. I think another thing just on the conflict of interest side is, what do you do when somebody else on the board appears to have a conflict, and how do you handle it? And I think that probably the best approach there is not to do it publicly, but perhaps to approach the chair and do it, and hopefully be done in a respectful manner, and some type of decision is made so that if the person doesn't recuse himself or herself, that the chair could handle it quietly.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll open it up for some questions.
Yeah, what is your understanding of Title IX and the role it plays within the Minsky system?
Well, it certainly provided opportunities for women in a number of ways, but athletics is, of course, the first one and the foremost one that comes to my mind. I do recall years ago, Minnesota State Mankato was not in compliance to the full, and there was a transition period where schools were allowed to. So then all of a sudden, the last couple years, they really had to scramble to make sure they got into compliance. Frankly, I really was not very interested in that, except to the point of view that I was excited that women could participate in the intercollegiate level. Beyond that, I'm really not very conversant about Title IX.
Thank you. Billy?
Well, I'm interested in your background as a health educator and a practicing surgeon. You know, the education, the training of people in health-related skills and careers is becoming more and more important to us. Do you see yourself being able to play a role, an advisory role, if you were to be on the Board of Trustees of MinSCU?
Yes, I think so. I look to my state senator, who happens to be Kathy Sharon, who's a registered nurse, mm-hmm. and she certainly, at the legislative level, has input and influence because of her health care background. MinSCU serves a very important role in healthcare. I think 80 or 85% of the nurses in Minnesota are educated by MinSCU.
Right.
So this is important. I'm aware that it's very, very, it's a lot more expensive to train a nurse than it is to provide an education for an English major. And I remember years ago when there was some shortages of RNs, and there will be, and LPNs, and there will be again. The then president of MSU approached the governor and said, if you give me the money, we'll turn out twice as many nurses. Didn't get the money, didn't turn out twice as many nurses, but it just shows that you do need to fund it somehow, and there's a sort of a delicate balance in your in what you can provide in terms of education, a good educational experience, and also keep costs under control, which is our...
Metro State has a program with Regents Hospital there. They've got a partnership going on,
yes,
on this training of technicians.
Yes. Yeah, and it's more than just nurses. I think nurses.
Yeah,
there's
all kinds of
yeah.
Yeah.
Are there other questions, Sonia?
Go right ahead. All right, Dr. Kearney. Within the role of trustee, much attention is given to, of course, the University of Minnesota and the MSU system, but there are Greater Minnesota, outstate institutions that you alluded to that need equal attention outside of the Twin Cities politics. How would you assure equitable attention to those institutions in outstate Greater Minnesota?
I don't know how you ensure it. I have a sense that it's already happening. I think there's support, as I understand it, and I'm not an insider in MSU, and I don't see this as a problem. Maybe it is. I do remember a few years ago there was the idea to cut down the size of MSU or the number of institutions, consolidate it a little more, like as with consolidated school districts or whatever. And I remember that the first two that were selected were relatively small, one of them being in International Falls, and one was someplace else in the southwest corner of the state, I think. Well, the ruckus that happened, and the bottom line is those schools were not eliminated, and I think it's a political hot potato. but certainly you want to have funding, and you want to have the resources, and I think that's an important part of the board's role, but it's an important part of the to keep the system healthy, you need to do that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Other questions, Tim?
Dr. Kearney, one of the, and I had a chance to do some of your reference checks, and one of them that Congressman Walz mentioned that I think would be great to have you talk about a little bit further is the program that you help out with in the elementary schools in Mankato with regards to the 6th and 7th graders, and the program. So I'll let you share.
I guess that's another one of the educational sidebars. My wife, my first wife, late wife, was very interested in education also. And her mother was a teacher, and Pam just had a passion for education, so she got very much involved with creating a new school in Mankato, the Bridges Community School. And that's part of District 77. It's within the district, but it's kind of like a charter school within the district, and it's a project-based school, and there's a lot of great things about that school. For example, I remember being on the playground as a second grader, and the fifth and sixth graders were the masters of the playground, and they were bullies, basically. And in this school, you would see the fifth and sixth graders helping the kindergartners or playing with the first graders, and a whole atmosphere of respect and mutual support was part of that school. The school at that time had about 120 kids, I think, and so my wife is a good friend of Janie Rush, who came from California and was also an employee at Hickory Tech, by the way. But Janie told her about some schools in California who made educational trips. So my wife went on one of those trips and came home and was very excited about starting something like that in Mankato. And so over a 12-year period, we took five groups out east. It was a six-day trip. We paid for everything, including chaperones and their costs. If parents wanted to come who weren't chaperones or a sibling, then they'd have to pay their own way. But for the most part, we paid the entire expense, and we flew to Virginia, and we went to Jamestown, we went to Yorktown, we went to Monticello, and then we spent 3 days in Washington and got the full tour there. And we were very fortunate. We twice met with Paul Wellstone. We tried to meet with his opposite on the other side of the aisle from Minnesota, but weren't ever successful. Then Tim Walz, after he was elected, he spent time with the kids. Paul Wellstone, by the way, took our whole group down on the Senate floor, which is almost unheard of. And but it was a great educational experience. We paid for that. We created a family foundation. And like someone in my family said to me, you know, when I made my first dollar and I made my first $100, I didn't put it in the bank. I wanted to spend it and give it away to somebody. And it was sort of probably an apt observation, and it was a little bit of criticism because I was trying to get a donation from somebody else in my family. They were reminding me I wasn't buying fast cars, but I was spending my money and giving it away. So we did that five times, and it was a lot of fun. I still have people come up to me in Mankato and tell me what a great experience it was, and their kids still talk about it. Our real first sort of intent was that the word would get out in the community and that other people would fund similar trips. I think because we tend to be low profile and that sort of attract attention, we probably didn't do a very good job of publicizing it. But for whatever reason, after she died and for some other reasons, I did not continue that program, and I'm very sorry about that. Oh, by the way, one of the highlights every trip was going to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry. Anyway, it's a great experience.
I was touched by your very thoughtful response concerning the time and service commitment to being a Minsky trustee. And I am showing all the applicants the size of the packet for the meetings, that the two-day meetings that are held nine times a year. And it's a wide range, everything from the operating budget to policies about emeritus professors. Do you want to comment about your current responsibilities and anything you'd like to say about being able to take on this commitment?
Sure. One of my flaws is that I have tended to be overcommitted in my life. And, you know, the old shibboleth, if you want to have something done, have a busy person do it. And I suppose I was kind of an example of that. But chasing your tail and just barely keeping up and giving so many different places really something I decided to put in my past about 5 or 6 years ago. And so I sort of cut back on the boards that I was on and involvement with some other activities and so forth. And now, of course, I'm retired. But I'll have to share with you that when I was first asked to do this, I was excited about it. Then I kind of became aware of what was necessary in terms of the commitment. And I sort of sat back and said, I got to think about this. And so I went through a personal vetting process. And one thing that I did was I talked to a couple of former board members and a current board of trustee member to get their take on things. I then went online and checked the agendas and read the minutes of the committees and the board itself for the last 3 years. And I have to say I didn't read every minute, but I did look at all of it. And I found that the board meets 2 days a month, and almost every year it does not have a meeting in February and doesn't have a meeting in December. But other than that, it's 10 times a year, and there's some special meetings that may come up between time. Talking to some of the former members, they talked about the homework. And I think it's very important when you're trying to make decisions as a board that everybody has all the facts. It doesn't do any good if they've sent you the facts and you didn't read them, and you're sitting there, and I've been in too many boards where people are sitting there and making decisions by the seat of their pants, and they're uninformed. And they'll make comments. It's obvious they didn't do their homework. And but I was trying to do my homework to decide if I wanted to do this job. And then after I completed my personal vetting process and my thinking about whether or not I could really contribute anything and how excited I'd be about it, I realized that I think it's a good fit, and I have the time, and I still have the energy, and I think it'd be fun.
Thanks very much. Is there anything else that? You seem to have covered all the bases with things, but do you have any other questions about the role of a trustee that you'd like to ask us?
I really don't.
Okay.
I think you've asked hard questions.
Well, you've done just fine. Would you like to make a closing statement?
I don't think so. I think we've covered everything pretty well.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming.